Welcome to minute 28 of season 8 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today for Hump Day is Tierney Steele, aka One Steele Sister. Welcome back to the show, Tierney.
Well, it's taking me till Wednesday, but FUBAR isn't a verb.
Not to mess you up,
half an hour into your podcast.
I have made it into a verb.
Okay.
Well, let's put it this way. If you go back to my Die Hard days, is yippee-ki-yay-ing also a verb? Also not.
All right.
So I've verbalized a phrase.
Now it's just tradition.
That's right.
All right.
So yes, grammatically, I agree with you. It is incorrect.
Yeah. Thank you. That's all I needed.
I know. You needed me to justify.
My Virgo that. Rising needed to be right about that.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. So minute 28 begins with bodies still getting swept away by the current, and ends with shots of women's faces as they work. So
dialogue-heavy minute, if there ever was one.
Very, very, very. We get the clacking of typewriter buttons. That's it. That's as dialogue-y as we'll get.
I mean, I love the score of this movie. So, I mean, it was an enjoyable minute, but yes, very quiet.
That's true. But I think it's quiet on purpose because it's trying to be somber.
Well, yes.
With everything that they're showing here. Come on.
Let me ruin the somberness for just a moment. And then I promise not to weep. My note for this minute was Sean Ryan sleeps with the fishes.
Yes.
Shout out to the Godfather minute.
Yes.
I couldn't help it.
Future guest on this season, Alex Robinson, will probably be very happy.
There we go. I was really reaching for notes for this minute. And I literally, as we started recording, I was like, I wonder if that's a person or a dummy. But I was like, should I like be looking up what kind of fish these would be? Like what fish would have washed up at Normandy? And then I realized like, this is not my podcast. It's fine. I will just wonder that.
Yeah, I'm going to keep wondering it also because I didn't look that up.
I don't need to do research. Not just the aquatic like fishery habits of that part of the North Sea. Now, is it the North Sea? No, the channel.
No, it's the English Channel.
But what would it have been in the 40s? Like, it probably would be different. I don't know. Now I've got everyone wondering this, and I feel kind of bad that I don't have an answer.
Who knows? Mm-hmm. That's just, sometimes even when you do a movie minute by minute, you will find that there are things that you don't know, you don't know the final answer to.
Yeah. And sometimes someone will come out with a tell-all oral history book 2 years after you finish your podcast on the movie. And you get to be real annoyed. It's like, what? This would have been so very useful.
Yes, that's true. So I actually just did a very big, quick search on the different fish species of Normandy. And you can find there bass, pollock, turbot, ray, cod, bream, mackerel, bluefin tuna, John Dory, squid, ballon wrasse, conger eel, whiting, gurnard, I looking at all these pictures, I couldn't tell you which one it is. But it's probably one of these. How's that?
There we go. I love it.
Maybe there is some significance. Who knows? The closest it looks to is a bass. But again, I don't know.
We're not staking any money on that one.
Well, actually, what it tells here, it says that the bass can be found in 1 meter of water near the rocky shorelines.
Okay.
As well as in 40 meters deep at sea. So again, it could be that's it's not the turbot. The turbot is found on the sandbanks, but no, that's not it.
And bluefin tuna is usually bigger than that.
Correct. The bluefin tuna is pretty big.
Whiting fish. All right. My guess is going to be that they are whiting fish. Just because that's about the right color and size and shape. So, all right.
Okay,
L
it could
listeners,
be.
write in with your guess.
That's right. That's right. Maybe it's a combination. Maybe it's both whitings and bass.
Oh,
You
mixing it
know,
up.
exactly.
W
Well, you can't
what
really
were
tell here.
your notes for this minute, Rob?
Okay, well, once again, we ended yesterday's minute with the with the bodies in the water, and this minute continues with that. We still get to see more shots of the way that the water is splashing on these bodies. I mean, even just looking at the direction of the legs of these dead bodies, it's just crazy. Like one of them has one leg that's on its side, and then the other one, it looks like it's on it it's standing on its toes. You'd think that that would possibly change after after the body is no longer dead, but you never know. And then after showing just a few seconds, they give us about 8 seconds of the bodies moving back and forth. Then they give us a wide shot coming from above, I guess is a crane shot of everything that's on the beach here. And we see lots and lots of dead bodies, some of them being pushed by the water, some of them face up, some of them face down, some of them face down in the mud or sand of the whole thing. And the camera moves at a great it's a very slow pace as the music, John Williams' theme music for this movie plays, and it's great. I mean, I love the music here. This scene is perfectly set up with the score, the way that they do this here. As the camera is slowly moving towards the bodies. I mean, we see a bunch of Czech hedgehogs in front of them, and we see more of these men and the equipment. And like we mentioned, we see the dead fish. And from what it looks like, there is more than one type of fish that is there, because they're not all the same color or size.
I've ruined the scene for everyone going forward.
No, not at all. Not at all. No, it's
I
I
wonder.
Journey, Journey. It's in my opinion, it's amazing that they decided to put the fish in the scene, because it's showing that the everything that happened here, even the fish, even the aquatic animals around there were not immune to being killed by during this battle. It shows us in some ways that a battle, between men isn't only going to be affecting men. There are other things that will be affected around it. I'm trying to think of what movie it is. Right now I can't think of it offhand, but there are movies where they show like a deer that gets shot along the way during a battle and things like that. It's like to show that when something happens in nature, so nature is affected by it also, not just the people that are around there. So okay, I can understand that. Now, as it moves in towards the body, who we will mention shortly who it is, do you see that above the body there's something that looks really strange? It's I don't know if it's supposed to be like scuba gear, or maybe it's supposed to be like a religious sacrament that like a priest has around his neck. I don't know what that's called.
I see.
Forgive my Jewishness for not knowing that type of thing.
Do do.
At second 32, you can see it
Okay. Hang on, and
in
we're
the
zooming
top
and we're
middle
zooming.
of the shot.
Oh, yeah. I do. I wonder if that's a priest of vestments.
Vestments, that's the word. Okay,
Is that
yeah.
everything or
I don't know, because it doesn't make sense that it
dark?
would be scuba gear, because it looks possibly like.
No, and it's and you can see it's got some insignia on it.
Right. Now, if that's priest vestments, that you know, when we saw last week, there was a priest performing last rites on someone, but
they would have kept it.
You know, it shows that you know, this is just a small little hint that there were apparently you know, part of the clergy that either lost their vestment along the way or lost a little more than that somewhere along the way.
Yeah.
I don't know. No, but it's interesting that it's just sitting there.
Yeah, because that's weird. It would be attached. I'm now looking at current army military chaplain vestments, and they do have, it's like a black, but all of these have gold fringe at the bottom. I would have to go back and rewatch that scene earlier where we see the chaplain.
Well, I don't think it's the same chaplain, because that chaplain on the beach was further in. This is right on the edge.
But you know what I mean? Like, to see if it's the same type that he was wearing.
I don't know if we're able to see it. I mean, I know it was last week, so I'm trying to remember which episode last week it was. I think it was episode 22. I believe it's very possible.
Yeah, I can't see what he's wearing.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't have a vestment.
Okay,
it's a minute.
So
22.
Maybe he lost it on the way in.
It could be. I mean, he has his cross, and he also has his.
And he would have
beads.
Had this with him.
Right. Well,
I mean,
in minute 22, he's not wearing it. Yeah.
Okay. So let's go with that, because who's going to tell us we're wrong?
Well, Father David didn't want to come on this. It was unavailable this season. So, you know, he can't give us
this
information.
This is what
on
he's
that.
Missing out on.
That's
Shout
right.
Out to Father David.
We need to send him a screenshot and say what
there
is that?
There we go. We can have a follow-up consult with him.
Yeah, I'm gonna send him a picture of a dead body with a possible vestment above it.
you could zoom in so he did. Honestly, Alo, would anything faze him coming from us by this point?
No, probably not. Probably not. I will think about maybe sending that to him. I'll see if he will respond to me like that. But there's also more detail that I love. If you look on the left-hand side of this body, so there is something that's basically wrapped in a life preserver. You know,
that's
maybe
what I was just looking at.
Maybe it's like ammunition or something that's just wrapped up there also. And that's also, that's just great that someone thought to put it, you know, in. I mean, again, if it's ammunition, it's pretty heavy. So you need a lot of life preserver in order to keep it afloat, but still. It's very
cool. That was one of the critiques I saw of this scene, where people pointing out that sometimes the boxes of ammunition are being moved by the waves, and they're like, you know how much those things weigh?
How do they know they're that? Not, one second, they could be empty.
Not. Why would they have the box then? Like,
no.
You wouldn't carry an empty box ashore.
No, but someone pulled out the rounds from it. It's usually a chained, you know, rounds that are chained together.
Yeah.
So it's possible that somebody, you know, pulled it out and then put it into their gun and started moving forward and just left the box there. No, that I actually, you know, that I could believe.
I don't know.
Okay.
That's not where I imagine them reloading, but
when you look at everything that we've seen over the last 5 weeks, you know, there nothing is the optimal place for you to be fighting or doing anything. You know, so if you had to reload right at the edge of the beach, that's what you're gonna do.
Yeah.
You know.
So I have not so much homework for you. I mean, yesterday I recommended a book about a specific troop carrier group, which I realized does not have the most, it's a little niche. But today I wanted to recommend, if you can get your hands on US camera books, I have 43, 44, and 45. D-Day appears in 1945, US camera, subtitled The USA at War. A U.S. camera book published by Duell, Sloan, and Pierce. Photographs judged by Commander Edward Steichen, USNR, and edited by Tom Maloney. This one, 45, was published in 1944. So the way I came across these is that, like, library book sales, like things being weeded out. But the U.S. camera series, these USA at War ones, are... like they're really good. They do not mince away. Like I have these strategically placed where my son won't find them, which is the fun thing about being a military history major is you then get to play, where can I put these books where my kid won't get into them, but also won't be intrigued by why they're out of his reach so that he won't go looking for them. Because some of these are extremely graphic. But the 1945 one, because it's always the year before, has the photos from D-Day. Let's see, they chose Ready for Action by the U.S. Coast Guard, and that's the shot in the landing craft, you know, looking out before they drop the ramp. Wading Ashore on D-Day by the U.S. Coast Guard, same thing, which, again, you just know that, like, Spielberg looked at these images. Allied Landing Scene from the Air by the U.S. Air Forces. Establishing the Beachhead, taken by Captain Herman Wall of the Signal Corps. But already, like I said, they don't shy away from showing dead bodies, but it is already so cleaned up. And then it immediately goes to French child given candy by Yank from the U.S. Navy. And then wreckage strewn beach low tide by the U.S. Navy. So and this one has dead bodies in it, but they are far away. You know, you can tell that it's a body, but you're not seeing details. And these are the sorts of images that Spielberg would have been looking at planning shots like this.
Yeah, for sure. Wow, that is fascinating. Thank you. Thank you for letting us know. If you want to send me some of those pictures, I will gladly post them. When this episode goes out. If you're inclined.
I mean, they were taken in 44 by the military, so I'm pretty sure I'm not breaking any copyright, you know?
I hope not.
It is what it is.
That's right.
All right.
And as the camera then continues to zoom in, we see, you know, it's zooming in on one of the dead bodies, a man that's lying on the ground, and you know, we can see on his backpack that it says Ryan S. And you can see that he's basically been shot in the face. You know, there's
Really curious if anyone got fooled by this, but you know, all the promo material, like we knew going into this movie what Saving Private Ryan was about. So
you're wondering if people if people thought that this
is like,
the
is
character.
This the Private Ryan?
Makes sense. Now, do you know where the name Ryan comes from?
No, I figured they just picked a...
No, not in the movie. I'm saying in general. The name Ryan.
Oh! Okay.
What is the origin of the name Ryan?
It's Irish, right?
Yes. And do you know what it means?
No, I don't.
Okay, so there's dispute as to whether it means water or king.
Hmm.
Now, I like the idea that it's water because of this scene.
Yeah.
But
I'll go with that because tyranny means ruler or chieftain or king. So.
But is that also Irish?
Yeah. Yeah. If I had married a Ryan, if my name was Tyranny Ryan, it would be ruler king. If that was true.
Okay.
Nope.
Okay. The given name of Ryan can be for either male or female, but they only started naming females Ryan in the 1970s. Before that, it was solely a male name.
And it's still rare.
Yes.
Now, and it's the same thing. Like, technically, Tyranny could be a boy or girl's name. Right. But it's a girl's name.
you sound a little biased by saying that, but yeah. it's possible.
As someone who gets things addressed, because if your name is not in a database, is recognized, like if they saw Rob, they would say that's a man's name. If they saw Sarah, they would say that's a girl's name. When they don't recognize the name as obviously male or female, the default is male.
Interesting.
I have been pissed off about this for many decades now.
Okay. I can understand that. Do you know other tyrannies? You are the only tyranny that I know.
Yes. So I have actually met another tyranny, and it was another tyranny S in real life, but she was only 1 year old, so we could not discuss how she felt about the name. And then I've known of other tyrannies, but the only one I've ever met in person was that baby. I'm making a note to put that photo up.
There you go. Now here's another source of what the meaning of Ryan is. It possibly means little king. So you see, maybe tyranny is a big like king and Ryan is a little
king. Yeah. Oh, my buddies.
who knows?
I'm curious. So we meet a couple Ryans in this film, and they are both from the Midwest.
Yes. You have James Francis Ryan and James Frederick Ryan.
Yeah.
One's from Minnesota and one's from Iowa.
Yeah, I was trying to follow because, I mean, obviously there are Irish everywhere. We take over. But my bias is because I'm from the Northeast. I'm like, yeah, New York, Boston, these are where Irish people are. And I'm like, Iowa? But I have relatives that moved out to Iowa, so who am I to talk?
Yeah, but in the 1940s, I mean, again, if you think of the names of the brothers, you know, Sean is the only one that sounds Irish. Again, Ryan, we've agreed is an Irish name. But, one of the brothers' name is Daniel. And then, he's James. He's James. And I'm trying, I can't remember the fourth Scott one right now. I don't remember the name of the fourth brother right now. Interesting.
I keep thinking John Patrick Ryan. That's my
John Patrick Ryan or Sean Pat? No, oh,
John Patrick Ryan is the full name of Jack Ryan. Jack Ryan, right. Tom Clancy.
That's right. Now, the name Ryan, has appeared in the U.S. As within the top 20 of male given names in the U.S. between 1976 and 2006. And it only appeared in the top 1,000 in 1946. Which means that beforehand it wasn't very popular. Using it as a female name, so it first appeared in the top 1,000 in 1974. And it has remained in the top 1,000 since then. And in 2018, it was ranked 364 on the list of the most popular girls' names, which means that it's not as popular as you might think. If it's 300.
No, but that's higher than I would have guessed.
Okay. Got it. All right, that makes sense.
When your name's Tyranny, you get used to big numbers on those lists.
Right.
Way down there.
Okay, that's true. That's definitely true. And the camera lingers quite a long time on his body, on the close-up of his body. And then
make sure we've gotten the point.
That's right. And then the shot quickly changes, and we see the face of a woman who is just looking to the side. And we hear the clackety clack of a typewriter, but we don't know what she's doing. And then we see an older woman also, looking down and the clackety clack of the typewriter. And then right before the minute ends, we get another 2 seconds of a third woman, another younger woman who's also, looking down, and we hear the clackety clack of her typewriter. And then, the minute ends.
Tom Hanks loves this minute.
Oh, for sure. we've already discussed the fact about how Tom Hanks is a typewriter affectionaire.
Do you think he had trouble filming the scenes where he insults typewriters in this movie?
I was actually wondering that. But until he comes on the show, we won't know the actual answer to that. Because there are two scenes where he does that. So,
yeah.
You know, says a lot about his character. I guess John Miller doesn't like, maybe that's part of his acting ability, that he knows that Tom Hanks loves typewriters, but John Miller doesn't. So therefore it's okay. It's possible. All right. It is definitely possible. All right. Did you have anything else you'd like to say about this minute?
No, we've gotten way more out of this minute than I thought we would. So good job, us.
We can always count on you, Tierney. It's good. It's good. All right. So every Wednesday, we have a segment called World War II Wednesday, where my guests will give their top five World War II movies. So, Tierney, right. Once again, why don't you start off with your number five and work your way up?
Oh, listeners, do you hear how this man hates me? Top five World War II films he sends me. You should just bring your list of your top five World War II films. All right, so here's the deal, guys. This list started out with like 30 titles on it. This is not the top best movies about World War II. These are my top five movies that are specifically about this war that could only take place during World War II. But are not about combat. So okay. Like originally Saving Private Ryan was on this list. It's about combat. It's out. All right. Because, oh my God, I was losing my mind. So I picked five movies that are about this war. Like, it's not like, oh, it's set during World War II. Like, Atonement is a great movie. But you could make the movie Atonement without World War II.
Yeah.
It would be different, but it could be done. These are movies that exist because of World War II, but are not about combat. But all right. So number five, and it's hard to start down at the bottom because it's the one I'm going to get the most crap about. I put in Tea with Mussolini. And this is why there are so many justifications before I started this list, because people are going to say, how the hell did this get on this list? And I just told you how. Tea with Mussolini is about English and American expats that are living in Italy that become enemies of the state, that are taken prisoner during the war. It's Maggie Smith, it's Judi Dench, it's Cher, it's Lily Tomlin. It is a stacked cast. I love it a lot. Similarly, and this shows a bias because I'm doing the lower ones as the more recent movies, but number four, I have Their Finest, which is a British movie about the BBC making a movie to boost morale, like during the Blitz, and they decide to make a movie about Dunkirk. And the aging actor who's, you know, too old to be in the war, who gets cast in this movie is Bill Nighy, and he's fabulous in it.
Yeah.
Also in... No, I'm going to save it. I'm like even now second guessing what order I have these in, but they're all bangers. Three, I put The Bridge on the River Kwai. Mostly because I needed to get some Pacific in there.
Okay.
I couldn't have a list without some Pacific in there, but Alec Guinness, the movie, yeah. Everyone knows The Bridge on the River Kwai.
Which will hopefully be a future movie that I will be breaking down, even though Tierney told me not to.
I've gone back and forth. These one and two are interchangeable as far as I'm concerned. I've got Casablanca. Again, not about combat, but very much a movie about World War II.
Yes.
And then number one, I have Mrs. Miniver, which is the British home front. But both Casablanca and Mrs. Miniver are 1942 movies.
They're 1942. They're both 1942, but they came out in different years. And that's how they both subsequently won Best Picture.
Yeah. I was trying not, at one point I was like, maybe I'll do top five that came out during the war. And then I was like, all right, this is getting ridiculous. So that's my list. And I now need to go lie down. That was hard.
I completely understand about that. This will not be difficult. This will not be easy for me to do either.
Yeah, it's a rough one, and I held out. I do appreciate in Tea with Mussolini, it addresses the fact that the Cher character is Jewish and like what that means different for her. It made me think of the book The Winds of War, which I read after that, and
And
excellent,
War and Remembrance,
excellent one.
Yeah.
And then I also I knocked out. I was like, okay. If a movie is about the Holocaust, it's not going on this list, but it might be better than some of the movies on this list. But we'll get to that later this week.
Yes, we shall.
It's a spoiler for my Friday list.
There you go. All right, great. So, Tierney, why don't you once again tell people where they can find you?
Oh, they're so sick of me by this point, but that's okay because you have no choice. I am known as One Steel Sister, OneSteelSister. I've got a .com. I've got a social media handle, and I do a lot of these guest appearances.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Instagram, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Facebook, you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Tierney, you feel like taking a little break tomorrow from your turkey festivities joining me just for another episode tomorrow?
Oh, yes. I have thoughts on the next minute.
All right. Great. So hopefully everyone will come join us on Thanksgiving tomorrow. But until then, earn this.
Earn this. My solitude.